Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. Man, we got a lot to get to today as we've seen Kevin Durant and LeBron James and, of course, Steph Curry all be eliminated either from the play-in or the tournament itself. And then, of course, you have the wild, wacky world of NIL, which we'll get to with part two with Dan Poneman, who is the most known and respected of the NIL agents, I believe, out in space in terms of landing players. You know, everybody does NIL a little bit differently. Some of these guys, you know, there's Darren Heitner, who we've had on before, who does more of the traditional name, image, and likeness deals with the Cavender Twins and others. But anyway, I think that it's been, and Jason Belzer has joined us previously. And of course, Dan Poneman will join us for part two. I think we'll have a part three as well. So let me give you a couple thoughts here. At the time that we dropped this pod, the Lakers have just lost their fourth game to the Denver Nuggets. And I thought the Lakers gave the Nuggets all that they wanted, really do. And there was a couple of games in the middle where LeBron didn't play as well, high turnovers, defense. Look, he's not the defender he used to be. It's not really close, nor should he be asked to be that level defender. But, I mean, I kind of find it hard. You know, you really sound like a LeBron hater when you're finding fault with Bron in this particular case, as opposed to the construct of the roster. And, you know, the decision, I frankly think to hire Darvin Ham, like that was a bad decision. And I don't know Darvin personally. I know enough about how he runs his ship, but the idea that you would bring a guy who's that inexperienced in, granted, former player, right? So there's the, and you know, with his size, he can legit look LeBron in the eyes. There's a little bit of mutual respect, but like, look, LeBron wants to win. And you just got the sense over the past 2 years of playing for him that, you know, whether it's personnel and, you know, D'Angelo Russell not being good enough or, you know, rotations. And I mean, even who was in the last shot last night when Jamal Murray hit the shot, like just the little things like substitutions are huge things in everybody's minds, but especially LeBron James. So, you know, somehow I went from, if you go back a decade ago, when LeBron was winning in Miami, I was trying to tell people this guy has been maligned and, you know, he's held to a ridiculous standard when he's an unbelievable player. And since that, in trying to keep it real and point out some of his flaws and the way he does things, et cetera, I've become seen as a LeBron hater. I just feel like I'm a realist in this thing. And the reality is that LeBron James is an incredible player and he gave incredible effort and had a ridiculous season. Yeah. Does he take a lot more plays off? Sure. Are there some excuses afterwards? Like afterwards we heard the, man, we just had so many injuries. Like, what are you talking about? Gabe Vincent was hurt. They never got anything out of Gabe Vincent. I'll give you that. And he probably would have been your starting point guard. That is a fair assessment. That's fair. But the top four players in the Lakers played 70 games. You know, the Lakers 7 seed didn't have anything to do with load management, didn't have anything to do with anything other than they just weren't that good. And I'm not convinced the Nuggets are as dominant as they were last year. Just, I don't think their bench is nearly as good. And I think that's one of the reasons that they trail, you know, so often they trail at halftime of all these games. As for LeBron and where he'll go, you know, he's obviously going to leverage the fact that he's a free agent and can be a free agent to get Bronny with the Lakers. I just think that's a mistake. I just do. I, you know, I get it. Like, look, if my dad could have done it, he probably would have done it too. Get you in the league, give you a chance, and you can develop in the G League. But like, I think Bronny can have a great college career, can really have a fun college career. Now, there is a world there where Bronny goes to Duquesne, right? Plays for one of his best friends. And in year two with the Lakers, there's also a world where LeBron, as a free agent, could sign for minimal money. Like, none of these guys do it, but he could sign for a lot less so that they could sign. They could actually build a super team, and he could act like he's 39. He could chill out some games. But again, we know the reality of how the Players Association would react to that, how LeBron would not. That's not something he's ever been down for. I just don't see it happening. As for Kevin Durant and the Suns, you know, that's just a bad mix. A bad mix. They made some poor personnel decisions. I don't think they needed Brad Beal. I actually think DeAndre Ayton would have been a good fit, especially playing for a new coach in Frank. But it wasn't. They didn't have a center. They didn't have a point guard. And the wings didn't all fit together. They didn't seem to buy in. And Frank seemed to struggle to coach. And then you have the Golden State Warriors. And what do they do? What do they do with Clay? You know, again, it's like you bring Clay back. Sure. Well, at what price? At what price? With all these guys, it's at what price? And then we wait to see with the Clippers and the Mavs. Losing coach could be the next Lakers head coach. But also, are you better off playing without Kawhi in this series and hope he's healthy for the next series and see if you can squeak out two more against the Mavericks? All right, more NBA stuff to come, but let's dig back into the portal and NIL. Here's part two with Dan Poneman.
All right, let's just get right back. Let's just dive right back in because you just got back from Portsmouth, which, of course, is the more kind of traditional agent place, right, where seniors are trying to find a guy to help them and guide them through all of this. And I know that you were hit up by hundreds of people in terms of listening to the first pod, questions they had. Let's start with a couple of things that I get asked, and I just wonder kind of your immediate response. Let's start with an agent itself. Like, why do you need an agent? Why does a college player need an agent in the world of NIL?
Well, I'll answer that question. But first, to your initial comment, it's funny. I was at Portsmouth Invitational, which, yeah, for those of you who don't know, it's the top 64 outgoing seniors in college basketball playing in a tournament in front of, you know, 250 NBA scouts. So I'm there because I have some guys in the draft, right? So I'm going to talk to NBA scouts to push my guys, get information. Almost every NBA scout just wanted to talk to me about NIL. Everybody's like, oh yeah, cool, let's talk about your players. But also, what the heck is going on with NIL? I mean, everyone is fascinated by this world. It's I'm so entrenched in it. It seems so normal to me. It's just everyday life. But I guess from the outside looking in, it is this whole mystery box of madness that I guess that's why there was so much interest in our first episode. I'm happy to be back. But I guess, yeah, let's jump into it. Why does a player need an agent? Well, yep. Let's look at any other sport, basketball, soccer, football, where athletes are making between 100,000 and a million plus. Whether it's Olympians or pro sports overseas or here, they all have agents. If you're a musician and you're making $1 million a year touring, you have an agent. When you're dealing with money at that magnitude, you need an agent. You need someone who's been through the battles, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of times, who knows what to look for in a contract to know, hey, is this team going to be able to wiggle out of paying this money, or is this ironclad? You need someone who understands the marketplace where you're not just, I mean, I've heard stories from coaches recently where parents are doing negotiations on NIL for their kids. And they're just seeing online these numbers that are sometimes real, sometimes fake. Like, we all saw the Jeremy Roach rumors recently, right? Like, and parents are just walking into coach's office and asking for absurd numbers and pricing their children out of real opportunities by asking for money that the market doesn't have for them, right? Like, with an agent, initially, yes, you have someone who's going to protect your money. You have someone who's going to understand the marketplace and know how to value you properly so you get the right opportunity and don't price yourself out of the market. But I think specifically in the NIL world, maybe the number one function of an agent is making sure you actually get your money. Like, we've heard all these stories of guys being promised big numbers and not getting those numbers, right? Or schools handing out contracts or handing out promises for money they haven't raised yet. A lot of them are true. Like, I've heard a lot of kids who got promised 100,000 and got 20, promised 400,000 and got 100. I mean, there are real instances of that I've seen.
How do you protect against that?
Well, first and foremost, it's getting an ironclad guaranteed contract when a kid gets on campus. And, you know, there's always, you know, as an agent, you want your contracts to be as guaranteed as possible. Like in the NBA, I mean, the players' union has done an incredible job of protecting their athletes, where, like, you can get arrested. There's a lot that can go down where that money's still going to be guaranteed. Now, in college, we're not at that point yet. Like, sometimes there's a give and take where, hey, if a guy's not academically eligible to play, maybe, you know, it's fine to cancel the NIL contract, or if he gets arrested and he's not on the team. But if he's injured, we need that guaranteed. You can't say, oh, he sprained his ankle, he's redshirting, he's not getting his money, right? So, you know, as an agent, initially we have to get the guaranteed contract, but then also I've seen instances of collectives filing for bankruptcy mid-season so they don't have to pay their players because they want to push out a coach. And it's my job to be a little bit of an enforcer, right? To go to those coaches and say, hey, you promised this kid this. This collective, you know, promised this kid this. And if you don't pay him, I control a huge portion of the market. And I can't trust you again. I can't work with you again, knowing that the first time or the second time we've done business together, you made a promise to a young man and you screwed him out of his money. We're not going to work together again. And most of the industry is going to find out that you don't pay your bills. So I think there is a checks and balances where there are agents to help stabilize that system to prevent a coach from promising a huge number for a grad transfer who, if they don't pay him, he's 1 year and out and there's no repercussions.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, right? Especially if, you know, the easiest way to get rid of a guy is to stop paying a guy, right? So how do you, I guess it's mere a threat of kind of a smear within or exposing within the industry. That's the only kind of defense you really have.
Well, I mean, obviously the contract is the defense, right? Like, I've had to use, you know, take legal action against collectives who weren't paying money, right? But yeah, like, I've seen one particular instance I'm thinking of where the same boosters who are funding the collective wanted to push out the head coach.
What they do is they just stop payment to the players, right? Mm-hmm. Then the players won't play, and the players won't play, and you can't get new players because you don't have any money in the collective. You're screwed, right? I know of a coach, a major coach, that happened to a year ago. Okay, so what do you do in that instance when it's not the coach's fault, it's the boosters and collective's fault? What do you do there?
That's where the contract comes in, right? I had that instance at a school 2 years ago where the boosters wanted to push out the coach. They stopped paying the players. Most of those players were on handshake deals, or they were on contracts that were negotiated by their parents that were very easy to be broken by the collective. Now, I had a sense going into it that school was shaky. I didn't trust the boosters. So I not only put the collective on the contract, but I put the individual booster's name as a guarantor on the contract. So when he wasn't paying everybody else, and they said, well, you can sue the collective, we're bankrupt, we got no money. I said, yeah, but your name is on the contract and my kid got all of his money. So that's what comes from being through hundreds of these battles, is you kind of know how to protect against those situations.
So Big 12 school?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're talking about the same school.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard any of this. You know, a lot of the pushback from some of the donors is like, there's no ROI on this thing at all, you know? And so I heard that at one, and it's a football deal, but one of the most regarded returning football players, you had a booster who just said, like, I'm going to buy all his rights, buy all his true NIL rights. And it's like $1 million. And then he won't do much of anything and will write it off as a loss. I'll write it off my personal as a loss to a certain amount. That's one way in which around some of the tax stuff, which you don't get any benefit from giving this money. Have you ever heard any of that?
Yeah, well, I know there was some controversy last year where a lot of collectives were promoting to their boosters that these were, you know, nonprofit 501c3, and you could have tax write-offs from your donations to the collective. And then, like, midway through the year, it turned out to not be the case all the time. And there were some unhappy boosters who had donated money, and it turned out they might not be able to write it off. That's actually the first time I've heard about the buying the NIL rights and writing it off as a loss. It's actually pretty genius. But one thing I want to talk about when it comes to ROI is, I mean, let's take a sidestep here, right? We've all seen the conversation online around like, this isn't true NIL. This is pay for play. This is not NIL. This is pay for play. Well, maybe it's not NIL in the sense of, you know, getting an endorsement from Nike or your local pizza shop, which is what we thought NIL would be. But I actually do believe in many cases, in most of these cases, this is players making money from their name, image, and likeness. Because these universities are using college sports as a marketing vehicle for the university. When Florida Atlantic or George Mason makes the Final Four, admissions go up, revenues go up, right? Those players are acting as a marketing vehicle for universities that bring in millions, if not billions of dollars. So
here'd be my pushback on that. Here'd be my pushback. And I understand that I've lost the and true NIL war because I saw this coming, which is like, I love the idea of true NIL. It's just not a reality. There's no way you can check and balance on everything. And this is what happens when there's no checks and balance. The argument against what you're saying, which is accurate, right? When you win, the school, usually the admissions go up and everything goes up. But when you win, you also, the NIL that I experienced as a player from having a great career, from being on teams that people liked, is the rest of my life, I don't really have to work. You know, I don't. And, you know, from guys getting a chance to, there's a guy named Matt Davison. Have you ever heard that name, Matt Davison?
I think so.
Matt Davison, he played basketball and football at Nebraska. Okay? But his claim to fame, I want to say it was the last time Missouri and Nebraska played, but I could be wrong because they're in different leagues now, obviously. But he caught a ball between his legs. He's a tight end. Dove for balls, bad pass, bobbled up. I think he caught it between his legs. Some miraculous catch. He literally used that to make his life. Right? I think he's the color commentator for football and basketball at Nebraska, or at least he has been. And the point is that the way it used to work, which I would agree with anybody who said, like, hey, maybe it's not the actual value of what you brought to a university, but there's other things a university does for you that we don't give them credit for. I mean, most of us couldn't have gotten into the school that we played for, let alone, you know, gotten through and graduated. But that's the real essence of how it used to be and how it does in fact even out, which is, yes, when you go to a Final Four, admissions go up, everything goes crazy. But you're also forever part of something special. And if you have any brains at all, you can make a life for yourself out of it. Now, how that factors into the NIL world should be, you know, there should be, I don't want to say performance bonuses, but like team collective deals. The reason it's not NIL, Daniel, is because we're giving these guaranteed contracts before there's ever any achievement, you know? So that's why I propose, like, all right, apparently now the transfer portal thing is just going to keep going on. But it's the combination of the transfer portal and NIL, which has this thing a mess. Because you don't have to stay, you can't build culture and can't really build a base for yourself for the future. And because we give money before the kid even played a snap or, you know, shot a shot, that it's that you're paying for potential performances. Whereas, like, again, a real NIL would be, hey, here's a guy who's had a great year. He was all league. He hit a big shot. He should receive, you know, something for all of his hard work. Like, that would be one in which I think you'd get kind of united front on contracts, where if you, I don't want to say backlum, you talked about last time about multi-year contracts. Is there a way to build these things where there's bonuses for, you know, team success, where there's bonuses for academic success, where there's retention bonuses as well? So you get kids that come back for a couple years, because that's really what's makes the sport hard to follow, is everybody's somewhere else every year.
Yeah, you're barking up an interesting tree here. Okay, and I have 2 points on it. To your first point, like, yes, if you're Doug Gottlieb and you're smart and you can, you know, talk, you know, sell water to a whale and you have a good career, yeah, there's a lifetime of opportunity from your career. But some of these kids, you said, you know, like I said, maybe aren't the smartest or maybe aren't the most outgoing or maybe aren't the most entrepreneurial, right? And now they might not be able to. Again, I have a friend, Matt Mooney, played at Texas Tech. He goes back every summer, runs a camp, makes probably, you know, 50 grand, whatever, because he played on that Final Four team. He's entrepreneurial. He's smart. He's savvy, right? There's other kids on that team that don't have that gene, right? That aren't capitalizing in that way, but the school did profit from their performance and name, image, and likeness. So to your second point, we would all love for there to be a system where we could actually reward performance. As of now, we're not allowed to write into NIL contracts bonuses for performance. But I think it'd be great if there was a world where, you know, you got a Final Four bonus in your contract, right? Then all these kids are motivated to win and play together because we're all going to get paid if we make it far, right? I think there is one tournament that just popped up next year, like I think it's like a holiday tournament where they have like, you know, 8 to 12 teams where every team gets $1 million and I think the winner gets two. I mean, I think that's great. That's a great incentive, not just for individual performance, but for team play. And one of the schools or all of the schools in that tournament are doing much better at retaining their players because there is this pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for guys to stay because you're like, oh, wait, if we stay here and we play in this tournament, we win, we split $2 million. So it's great. But right now, the system we have doesn't allow us to reward for team success, except for in that instance, right? You can't put it's harder to put performance bonuses based on the current construct of the rules, right? I have talked to one collective recently that has started putting in a bonus for a postseason appearance, which is the first time I'd heard that this offseason. They said, hey, this is the number. And this is the number that, you know, the bonus if they make the postseason. I believe that's allowed because as a marketing company, which is the NIL Collective are marketing companies, you can say if the team, you know, plays these extra games or if the team you're on gets this extra exposure, that it gives us, you know, added marketing value to your name, image, and likeness rights. Thus, we can give you a bonus. But the reality is the rules are so gray. They're constantly changing. And no one knows right from left. So until we do stabilize this and like have some real rules and a real system, which we all need to work together to do, you're right. They're going to have to gamble on the potential NIL future of these guys. But I'll counter that and say most jobs are that. If you're hiring someone for a sales job, yeah, there's commissions, but you are gambling that the money you're paying them is going to lead to profit. That's how most jobs are, right?
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Again, it's like, okay, so which job is this for players? Is it their first job? Right? So if it's their first job, you know, like you're getting nothing and having to earn it, right? And then if you achieve, then your every job you get a little bit more. That's where it does kind of mirror the business world.
This is so unique because, again, like in pro sports, the pro team is the for-profit vehicle, right? Whereas with college sports, the college team is a marketing arm for the true for-profit vehicle, which is the university itself, right? So this is
true. I would only here's one thing that I think, and your argument is a valid one in that we use athletics to market and promote the university. My pushback to this has always been, hey, guess what? They do that with everybody, right? Like the college and universities are, they're brilliant businesses because they operate under this tax exempt status. They operate as if they're not a business. And then what they do is they charge everybody. And then You know, they make money off of basically everything. And then if you achieve anything, science, music, obviously sports is the easiest to promote, but they're going to get all of the juice out of that orange they can. And then the second you finish, they're like, hey, can you give something back for the next generation? Like, it's amazing what they do. Like, the balls on these people. I just got done. I just, you know, paid for my kid to graduate from XYZ University, and now they want, you know, $100,000. Like, what? I just gave them $250,000 over 4 years.
I think the tip of the iceberg is the NCAA, and the real iceberg is colleges and universities in America, and the scam that some are. I mean, I didn't go to college, right? And I'm doing great, but maybe I'm the exception to the rule. But yeah, I mean, and to that point, people always talk about, you know, donor fatigue and NIL. The NIL world, like, when are they going to stop? You know, yeah. When are people going to get tired of donating money for, you know, with no return for these basketball teams? They've been doing it since the beginning of time. Every science building and park bench on these universities are built by someone who gave money with no return, right? I mean, there used to be
write-offs with it, right? And people, like, again, I guess rich people like their names on buildings. That's my building. You know, whereas with a player, they're here and they're gone so quickly. When people accuse you of poaching a player, what's the reality to how you view it and how things actually go down?
So poaching, I don't like this term, right? Poaching is a term that is used in the college basketball marketplace, but will never be used in a pro context, right? If you have a player in Spain playing for Baskonia for $400,000, and Barcelona reaches out to the agent and says, hey, we're really interested in your player for next season. We have $1 million. That is not poaching. That is a higher level team exploring, building their team next year using players who have overachieved at a lower level. And similarly, if Baskonia is reaching out to the agent of a bench player on Barcelona about their interest in moving down a level, that's not poaching. That's the way the marketplace works. Whereas in college, if there's a player making $0 at a mid-major and a high major uses an agent or someone else to put out a feeler, if that kid would be interested in moving up a level to make life-changing money, it's called poaching, right? And I think we need to like throw that term out the window. I do think that we need more strict guidelines and bylaws around when these conversations can happen, how these conversations can happen, what constitutes tampering and what doesn't. But you have mid-major coaches up in arms that everyone's poaching my players. No, these guys are leaving for better opportunity. They're leaving to better their lives. And like one of my biggest, if not my biggest pet peeve in this whole economy, this whole NIL world, is when I hear coaches say things along the lines of, oh, he's a good kid. He's not worried about money. Oh, he's about the right things. He's not worried about money, right? Or like, oh, that kid just wants the bag, right? It drives me crazy because when I hear a coach saying he's about the things, the right things, he doesn't worry about money, I hear a coach saying, oh, he's willing to give me his labor for free so I can profit. I like that kid, right?
I think you're taking it to way too far of an extreme because the kids that I've talked to that the coaches gravitate towards, it's not that they're not going to get paid, it's that that's not the driving force behind every decision. And that's actually a really good life lesson. It's a hard one that I think all of us learn at some point, which is like oftentimes the best jobs are not the highest paying jobs. You got to find the right fit for yourself. And you know, yes, no, do you want to go play for nothing when everybody else is playing for something? Of course not. Nobody's telling you to play for free. But, you know, when you have an established role, established identity, when you have sweat equity in a program, you know, when you care about winning and losing and know that the money will take care of itself, like there is a difference there between, hey, I want you to play for free, and you're only concerned about the money. And somewhere in the middle is that sweet spot, that way you're trying to thread that needle.
Right. You're right. The sweet spot is in the middle. And one thing I'll say, you said, oh, the money will take care of itself. I've heard so many coaches and collectives say, hey, if you come here and perform, we could give you more than this. I've heard that every time, right? Here's your baseline number. If you come here and play well, you could make way more than this. Zero times out of, 50 plus deals I've done in the last 2 years. Zero times have I get more from the collective.
No. But again, this is where having an agent, I want to be properly compensated for what I'm worth. I have Dan Poneman, for example. He's negotiate that. We get into the window where, you know, that you're in the right area financially. Like it's just about like our relationship and do I want to play for you? Like, because that should be really the argument, right? Like if a kid's a 250 kid, he can get 250 a bunch of different places. All right. So what makes your program unique? Why should I come play here when the money is the same X, Y, Z, whatever? You know, that's where the coach has to then, okay, here's what we're unique. And for a player, you can tell if he's engaged in that or if it's just, they listen, whoever the highest bidder is, that's where I'm going. Which, again, you're allowed to do. But I actually really understand that because that mentality is one which doesn't really allow you to engage with the players, with your teammates, with the school. And again, it's not an all or nothing thing. They're all going to get paid. It's just a question of if you write down the 10 most important things, is it number one or is it number seven? And I think, you know, once you get past like 3 through 10, now you're okay. But if it's the number one thing, it just doesn't work for some places.
Yeah. And honestly, when I sign a new client, we do an intake interview where we ask them rate 1 through 10. How important are each of these things to you? Money, academics, winning, player development, conference, location. So we let the client tell us what they value. And it's our job as an agent to find something that fits the buckets that they value most, right?
Sure.
I have kids this year that are grad transfers that said, I need a really good MBA or law program at my grad school, right? That's important to them. There are other guys who say, hey, I want a grad school where I can take ballroom dancing and not actually have to take real classes, right? So every kid every young man has a different set of priorities. But if a kid says, look, Dan, I know I'm probably not a pro. My family is struggling. My mom is sick. I need the biggest bag possible. That doesn't make him a bad person. Who is a coach to tell you what your values should be? Right. If you are different, kids have the luxury of saying money doesn't matter that much. I have a trust fund. My family makes money. I'm middle class. Whereas other kids don't have that luxury. And this money is life changing for them. And if they say this is my number one priority, they are not to be judged for that. It is not a coach's place to say, oh, he's about the wrong things. But to your other point, I would say
why can't he make that judgment?
Why can't a coach make the judgment that he's about the wrong thing?
Yeah,
because
listen, if you bring a kid on campus and you literally can't get into focus because all he's doing is chasing ass, you know,
it's about the wrong things. But I'm saying in the instance of specifically if a kid's life circumstances dictate that money can and should be a priority in this decision making process, that's not for a coach to say, oh, you should be more worried about player development or tell a kid what he should be concerned about, right?
And, well, you only do that if you don't have the money.
You do that if you don't have the money. The right thing.
We're 50 short. Yes, but we have great player development.
Yeah, we have great player. Oh yeah. He's about the wrong things. No, you don't have a big enough budget. But having said that, of the guys I represented, probably like only 20% end up taking the highest financial offer. My goal is generally to get multiple schools in the same range, so a kid can make a decision based on other factors, right? If you have four schools and 4 to 450, great. Now you can just pick the best one, right? There are situations where there's schools that have outlier offers that are hard to turn down, but kids, in my experience, rarely actually take those.
Generally, I agree. I know of several of those from last year. Biggest deal per year, biggest deal you've done so far this year?
Oh, I don't know if I should... I don't know if they can tie it back to an individual. I've done multiple 500 plus. I haven't broke a million yet this year.
What is the market like this year as opposed to last year?
The market is a lot more robust this year. last year
in terms of number of deals or the actual deals themselves?
Both. Like last year, if you heard of someone getting $500+, that was an outlier. This year it's completely normal. It's happening all over the place.
But mostly one conference.
No, multiple conferences. Oh yeah. I can think of right now guys making, you know, 5 to 7 in the ACC, the Big 12, and the Big 10. I don't know about Big. I know I can think of a couple in the Big East. But yeah. Yeah.
Generally, the SEC has the most money and spends the most money.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I'm thinking of a couple Big East teams right now, a couple Big 10 teams, a couple ACC, a couple Big 12 that are consistently.
A couple Big 12s that have big money, but I would say across the board in the SEC, you're either in, like, you got to be in on some level, because otherwise it's stupid.
In the SEC, if your budget's less than $3 million, you're in a bad spot.
Here's a question that I have that I wonder. Okay, so a lot of these guys, you're at Portsmouth, a lot of those guys are going to go sign their first overseas deal, right? What has the adjustment been like for college players adjusting to the fact that sometimes you're going to make more money now in college than you are when you're a professional player in your first contract? What are those conversations like from the agent side?
Yeah, I mean, I like to have really real conversations and lay out clear expectations ahead of time. And make sure that these guys are making their current their college decisions knowing 3-4 steps ahead. So, you know, recently, for instance, I had a client turn down upwards of $600,000 to take about a third of that because he really liked the school. And I said, great, I support you, but like, I want you to, let's game out the different paths you could be in your financial future. And then you can make the decision if this extra, you know, $400,000 is how important it is to you, because there might be a point when you're 25 years old playing in the G League making $45,000, when that extra, you know, $300,000 to buy a house could be really useful. But if you want to turn it down, that's fine. But let's talk about these different paths. Because for these guys, if you're not in the NBA, this is your peak earning, right? Like G League salaries are 40, you know, if you're, depending on if you're getting an Exhibit 10 or not, like you're making between like 40 and 115,000, you know, pre-tax in the NBA. You know, rookies overseas are generally, even if you're a high-end rookie, you're making, you know, 50 to 70 net your rookie year. So most of these guys are going to be taking pay cuts if you're not in the NBA. Now, it could work a few different ways. On one hand, they could be pissed, like, hey, I'm used to making this amount of money. Why am I making this now? But on the other hand, it makes it a little more palatable, because if you've saved your money, now you can live a little more comfortably and climb that European ladder, right, or fight it out in the G League. Because you've got some savings, right? It makes life more livable if you're making a $40,000 salary in the G League and you've got $200,000 saved from your college career. You don't have to train guys in the offseason to make up that income. One thing I think we're going to see, though, actually, what I've noticed this year is college players being less likely to go the G League route because they're so used to making so much money, right?
Sure.
You're accustomed to making $300,000-$400,000 a year and you're like, wait, my salary is going to be what? $40,000? All right, let me go to Asia and get this bag, because I've become accustomed to this quality of life and I can't go back to that lower income bracket. So I do think it's going to make guys go overseas quicker rather than going to the G League because they want to continue earning at the level they have been.
Where is the portal now? So right now we're in the end of April, and when I say where is the portal now, because you have. This is my interpretation of it. You're actually living it on a daily basis, right? So you had the initial thrust of portal guys. Most of them weren't going to be welcome back at their school anyway. You know, as soon as the season's over, they put themselves in the. Yeah, you also had, you know, coaching changes or whatever. And then as the dust settled, you could see which players would go in and probably ask for, you know, a rate increase. Coach would say no, or we don't have that. And then you'd see those players leave, and now the market kind of got. Gets to the flush. You've seen some high-end players. A couple of them have committed, a couple of them haven't. A lot have declared for the NBA draft. And I believe, again, this is me outsider, your insider, is that's just delaying the portal thing, because it doesn't put you in the portal, but it puts you in the portal to declare for the NBA. And so it's kind of chaos right now because you have over 1,000 guys in the portal, but you also have, you know, over 100 guys with their names declared for the draft. And then you have, you know, the grad transfers that are, there's untold grad transfers, and, you know, they're on the market. They don't have to put themselves in the portal, right? What am I missing anything? Am I missing any kind of group of players that's out there?
Actually, grad transfers do have to put themselves in the portal this year. They changed that because last year was chaos. Like last year, there were people picking off grad transfers from other teams when they're already in school on campus. So they did change. And for NBA players, if you're testing the waters, you still have to put your name in the portal. But where we've reached right now is poaching season. And again, I know I just said I don't like to use that word, but that's the terminology we're working with here. Like we've reached the point where the guys in the portal are the guys in the portal. There's a few more entering every day, but a lot of the guys that are entering now are entering with a destination in mind, right? We've reached a point where schools with big budgets have struck out on guys that are currently in the portal, and they're looking at their roster saying, we have to figure something out. And they're calling agents to ask about guys that are currently on other rosters. And people can say it's unethical, it's wrong, but everybody's doing it to each other. So yeah, you're getting a guy poached off your roster, but you're trying to poach somebody off someone else's roster. So until we get to May 1st, we have about a week left of people throwing insane offers at guys who are on other people's rosters, and everyone's doing it to each other. So no one can be holier than thou, because I mean, that's what the name of the game is. Until we have a set of rules that we can enforce that set guidelines around what's allowed and what isn't, this is the name of the game. So I think the first wave of the portal was the guys who knew all year they were entering. The second wave was, oh crap, everybody's leaving my team, or oh crap, my coach got fired, or oh crap, I don't like this new coach, let me enter the portal, right? And then it's, oh crap, they brought in someone at my position, so writing's on the wall, I got to get out of here, right? And now we've passed that phase, and now it's, oh crap, I don't like, or I can't get the best guys in the portal, let me go find a guy on someone else's roster to pick off. And I think that's a final wave of the portal. So we're going to probably see some interesting names this week, just like we saw last week, that no one expected to jump, that already have a spot in mind.
What about when you commit to a school, and then that school, I saw this yesterday, one school took two point guards yesterday. Thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. How binding are these agreements when you commit to a school?
They're not. They're not. I mean, straight up, like most of these collective contracts are like tied to being enrolled at an institution in a specific geographic region or parameters like that. But if you don't go to that school, like generally no penalty to breaking it. Again, I suggested on the last one, there could be buyout clauses that could prevent that. Right now, these agreements really aren't binding. So if, you know, I think, you know, from my perspective, if you commit to a school and you give your verbal agreement and you handshake or sign with the collective, and before the period's over, somebody else, another school, makes a bigger offer, I do think it is unethical, and I would never advise a client to back out of an agreement for a higher offer if you've already made an agreement. I think your word, you should stick with your word, right? However, if you agree to something, you agree to a role, and they say, you're going to be the only point guard, and we make an agreement, and they bring another point guard, they put themselves in a position where now you might need to look around for an opportunity that suits you better. If that makes sense. Like I think it's not right to break a handshake or written agreement if everything is as they promised it would be. But if things really change and they've lied to you, then I think a kid should have the right to shop around and find something that suits them better.
Okay. The last one for this part. We're talking about okay. Then there's also a bit of a waiting game here, right? Because you have, let's just use the term, we use the term mid-major way too loosely, right? Because there's actually low major, mid-major minus, mid-major plus. Mm-hmm. All right. So in the mid-major world, like you have players, a lot of them grad transfers, they're sitting out there, and you've established what their value is, right? Well, what you believe it should be. And schools that are recruiting them are somewhere in that area. But you know in the back of your head that after poaching season probably comes panic season. Like, we ain't got anybody. We got to go, and we'll be willing to overpay guys that we previously thought were at, you know, at 50. Now we're willing to give them 75 or 100 because now we're high major, as opposed to 50 or 75 is really kind of topping out at the mid-major level. But that's like a delicate balance for you, right? Because you have the player and you want to put them in a place where they can play, right? You want to make sure you don't want to, because again, it hurts your relationship with the team if you send a kid who can't play at a high major level to a high major. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, you got over on them for a year, but your relationship is everything. And because you've done the evaluation thing, go back to when you were 14. So what's that waiting game like, or the balance of, hey, I have a bird in the hand, but I potentially have two in the bush. Do I take this deal? Do I not take this deal? Knowing that the high majors are going to panic when some of them need to fill roster spots here late in the portal game.
Yeah, I mean, we've already reached panic season, peak panic season, I'll tell you that much. But again, my philosophy as an
agent, the best part about you talking about peak panic season is you're doing so with no facial affect at all. Like, you're like, they're panicking.
I'm not panicking the school.
I know you're not.
Right? I just have to sit here and navigate the changing marketplace and understand what phase of the portal we're in. But again, my philosophy as an agent is when you find something you like, you take it. You don't wait to get an extra 20 or 50 that might be out there on the horizon. You find something that suits you right, you take it. And maybe I have the luxury as an agent to say that because the difference of commission is not materially affecting my life, right? If you're an agent where you've got four guys and your whole income for the year is depending on these four commissions, maybe you drag it out to get every single penny and you put them in bad situations. But sure. My business is doing well enough that I don't need the extra $2,000 here and there. For myself, I can tell a kid, hey, yeah, maybe you can get an extra $5,000 or $10,000 if you wait, but this is a really good situation where you're really valued. And yes, someone could come out of left field and offer you a crazy bag, but this school's been recruiting you for a month and done a really good job. Kind of go where you're valued, right? But having said that, yeah, there are going to be some guys that were getting offered 40, 50, 60 all through portal season, and someone's going to come offer 120 because they're desperate. Of course, that happens all the time. And additionally, there are going to be situations where people are tapped out on budget and they don't like their roster and they're going back to boosters being like, yo, I need another 1.5. There's this really good kid on this other roster. I need a million for him right now. And that's when kids get really overpaid. There are a few schools last year that late in the period paid absurd sums for guys who averaged, you know, 4 points a game. And those coaches got fired.
Then you end up pissing off the boosters and then you get yourself, fired.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you were going to establish a couple of basic rules, I put you in charge. How do we calm the chaos? What do you do?
First off, we have to have a mutually agreed upon governing body for collective contracts where if there's non-payers, late payers, liars, that there are repercussions. We can't have schools out here promising one thing and not paying it or giving contracts for money that hasn't been raised yet. Right? I've seen that a lot, right? They're promising $3 million in contracts with 1.5 in the bank. Right. So we need something to put parameters on what happens when kids aren't getting paid what they're owed. Additionally, we need.
Okay, so wait, let's start with that. So how do we do that? Because right now, I'm sure the NCAA, and the NCAA, in fairness to them, is they're just really made up of the schools. And the issue that I think most of these school the the high major schools have is like, look, we're handling this like this is the Senate. Everybody gets a vote. We want it to be more like the, if anything, the House of Representatives, where things are more skewed in our favor because we're making more of the money and we should determine how all this stuff goes. And so so all these schools are like, what's the difference if we pass a rule? You can get it shot down in a court anyway. You know, none of it can stand up. So how do you handle that element to it?
Well, again, we're far away from this, but I think, you know, players having some sort of union where we can work together with the NCAA, where they're not just making rules on the players' behalf, but that we're working together, collectively bargaining to find something that works for everybody. Like, I have friends at the NBA, at the NCAA. I just hung out with two of them at Portsmouth this week, and we talked about potential solutions, but we're so far away from those actually being able to be put into reality. But again, I think the problem to this point has been NCAA just arbitrarily making rules that everyone has to follow, where the players don't get a say. The institutions are the only ones that get a say. When we get to a world where the players and the institutions can work together to create a system that works for everybody, then we're going to be in business. But I think we're pretty far off from that. Because the NCAA has been, I think, hell-bent on putting the toothpaste back in the tube. It's not going back in the tube. The toothpaste is on the table, or the toothbrush, whatever analogy you want to use. Let's call it what it is, and let's figure out how to work together to move forward instead of putting that toothpaste back in the tube. So when the NCAA is going, we can start working together to create a sustainable system.
Okay, so we have there's other, obviously a bunch of other kind of things, that hoops to jump through before you get there. Okay, so but in the short term, some sort of accountability where people have to pay what they contract to pay. And what else?
Rules around when contracts can be signed, how they can be negotiated, when they can be negotiated, right? Portal season should be called free agency, right? Should be for transfers, you can negotiate from here to here. This is when contracts can be negotiated and signed. These are the rules around when a player can ask for, or an agent can ask for an extension, you know, just like we have in the NBA, right? Like, there needs to be some parameters around what's acceptable and what isn't, so we can have a little bit of guardrails on this chaos, right? I think this system is not sustainable of these external NIL collectives. Again, like, let's call them what they are, and let's, you know, tie them to the institutions and have situations where there can be, like we talked about, performance bonuses and postseason bonuses and schools directly raising money to give to the players, sharing the TV revenue. Like, I was speaking to someone the other day who proposed, what if the conferences shared some of their TV revenue with the collectives, right? Hey, there's $2 million a year to each collective from our TV revenue as a conference, right? Like, start taking the burden just solely off the shoulders of the boosters, bringing some of that TV revenue in, and tying the collectives to the schools. I think that's
the problem with that. The problem with that is, okay, that money is generally all spoken for. So you can get it, but something's going to come up short. Yeah, and we all know what that is, right? That's the only place they're going to cut is in the non-revenue generating sports. That's where the cuts are.
Yeah, in theory, yes, but like, also we have, you know, these, it's funny, I see schools raising, you know, $100 million, $500 million for these crazy practice facilities and, you know, building new arenas, and like, maybe some of those luxuries aren't quite as necessary. Would a kid rather have?
I agree with you. Most of these coaches will tell you, like, I don't want a new facility. I don't want any of that shit. Put all that in the collective.
I love Northwestern, but I think they built like a $900 million, was it $300 million practice facility on the lake. I'm sure some of those players would have rather had a slightly less a beautiful practice facility on the lake and a little more money in their pocket.
Yeah, well, it's always amazing. They all do things, and some of it they do because they get grants from the state. You know, they can whip it, and they get some academic money as well. So guardrails for contracts in terms of timing and some fine print issues. You got to have accountability for non-payers.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Well, one thing I would theoretically like to say is some type of certification program for agents, right? Like, the NBA has, you have to pass a test and pay dues to be an NBA certified agent. In the NCAA, anybody can just pop up and call themselves an NIL agent, and there are people who are sabotaging players' careers, ruining. I mean, it's tragic. But the question is, who's in charge of certifying those agents? In the NBA, it's the players' union that certifies those agents. It's an organization that is created to protect and defend their players, so they want these agents to be qualified. So it's not the NBA certifying the agents; it's a players' union. So if the NCAA is in charge of certifying agents, their incentives are different than if it was the players. And we don't have a union yet. The players aren't even employees yet. So we're so far away from that. So I don't know how we can get to a place where there's a vetting process for agents until we have that. I mean, I've talked to the NCAA about their agent certification program for players who are testing the waters, the NBA waters, right? And I think they want to create something for NIL agents, but they really can't because they're marketing deals. These are marketing companies that are giving marketing deals, not the institutions themselves. So the NCAA really, their hands are tied. But I think we need to get to a point where there is some type of vetting process for agents, because there are some people who are doing some criminal things to kids' careers by just not knowing what they're doing.
Right. You have guys that are kind of the old school runners, and they're, you know, moving pieces around and just to make a quick buck. And those people, some of them even actually, it's not that they have anything, any bad intentions. They just it's just a little too old school.
I'll actually say some of those old school guys are better agents than some of these pop-up agents. Like some old school AAU coaches know this market better than anybody, know how to price a player. Right. How to cut a deal, because they've been doing it for 20 years. Now, some AAU coaches and runners for years have been doing deals and pocketing the money, which is criminal, right? But there have been guys who have been helping kids' families keep their lights on with, you know, shoebox money for years, and they know this market better than anyone. But some of the worst actors I've seen in this place are actually like college kids or recent grads who read about NIL and call themselves an NIL agent and reach out to kids on Instagram. And I get DMs all the time because people will see my tweets or listen to our podcast, right? And I've had people say, hey, I've signed these five players. They're in the market, but I've never seen an NIL collective contract. Can you send me one, or can you tell me how to talk to a collective? I'm like, you're representing a player in the biggest decision of his career, and you've never seen a collective contract. You don't know how to have the discussion. They're like, hey, do we talk to the collective now or when they get there? Like, they don't even know how the process goes. There's no education in this other than listening to us talk on this podcast or reading me and Darren Heitner and Mitt Whitner's tweets. And I think some of the worst actors I've seen are just like young people who call themselves agents and reach out to people on Instagram. And because you got NIL agent in your bio, you seem official and you are ruining people's careers.
Sure. All right, let's do this. So we have basically 1 week left until the portal closes. So we'll see. As you point out, there's going to be probably some big names here. I'll throw out here that if you listen to this and you have any sort of NIL question, feel free to tweet us or hit us up on Instagram to DM us, and we'll work it into a part three. And in the meantime, like, you get hit with these questions all the time, as do I. Like, you and I got to keep like a better text chain going of it. We get the ADD thing going. We start going on something else. But it's going to be an interesting week, because you've had, I know there's one player that everybody said he told people it was $1 million and he committed to a place. So I'd love to know if that was in fact $1 million at the end of the day. And then let's have a part three kind of wrap up discussion. But yeah, so my original rules that I thought would work would be that you didn't get NIL. Yeah, you didn't get NIL money until you played a game for your program. That was my, and I believe that you have to have retention bonuses. Like, the whole way to use this to quote unquote save the sport and propel the sport, because I think that there's a window there where you can make it so that it's better than it's ever been, because guys will stay 2 or 3 years and they're not going to be a second round or undrafted draft pick, right? But you gotta, how do you create that window? What do people want to see? They want to see the best players play at the biggest schools. What they want to see. And for as long as possible. They kind of fall in love with these kids, if you will. I thought that multi-year deals, and you know, it's with the new rule, it's not going to happen, so it doesn't even worth bringing up. I have thought that not sitting out on the second transfer is a mistake. Like when you don't have to be fully engaged mentally because you can transfer and play anywhere. But again, that's not the path that they're choosing to fight right now. So I think the way to do it is you have to have some sort of retention bonuses. And I'm with you on the buyouts. Like, hey, you want to leave? Sure. Fine. Go ahead. Gotta be a buyout. I think those two things, along with some sort of delayed gratification where you have to perform before you're getting paid. And I understand the other side to it, right? The other side to it is, hey, they offer me this gargantuan sum of money. Everybody says they don't have it. And if I don't get it July 1st or, you know, July 15th, when I've been on campus for a month, I'm out. So that's the other side to it, right? That you have to protect the student, not just protect the school. But there has to be some form of balance in protecting both sides, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think retention bonuses are great. Graduation bonuses are great. Team performance bonuses are great. Multi-year deals with buyouts. Now, buyouts have to go both ways. If you run a kid off, you got to pay him. Got to buy him out of the contract, right? And those are great. And I think it would be fine if you don't get paid until you play for the school. If what we talked about, there was some type of governing body where if the money doesn't get paid, there's legal repercussions and you can collect on that money. Like we have in overseas, we have FIBA that, you know, can enforce that. So I think me and you are having these conversations, and everyone should be having these conversations who are, you know, stakeholders in the sport to move these things forward. You know, again, what we're doing right here is trying to think of ideas, and no one has all the answers, but instead of just complaining about the way things have changed, let's continue having, no one has the answers. I'm knee deep in this thing every single day, up to my eyeballs. I'm going to pick up my phone and have 50 calls, but I don't have all the answers. All I have is some ideas and a desire for this thing to stabilize, because I love college basketball and I grew up in this. I've been doing this since I'm 14 years old. My best friends in the world are all college coaches, and I just want to move this thing forward just like you do. We've created built our lives on this sport. And I think instead of just complaining and bitching about how everything's bad, like, let's just continue having these conversations between me and you, between college coaches, between the NCAA, between the agents, between the players, between the AAU coaches, so we can all put our ideas together and figure out how to move this thing forward. Because there is a path forward, like you said, where there can be a better future than there was before. No one, I don't think anyone thinks the past was great, where coaches are making millions of dollars and kids' families can't afford to fly to see him play. And the only way to do it is for a coach to, you know, illegally give part of his salary and risk going to jail to help keep that kid's lights on. No one thinks that was the right system, but we all know that this isn't the right system either.
So. No, I do. But I do wonder, like, whenever we put any, even if we get a collectively bargained upon agreement, right? And again, you're years down the road. Basketball has been an under the table pay sport forever, right? Yeah. So it's like, hey, we can only pay a kid $250. Like, do we really think that that's what it's going to be? So that's,
yeah. But look, you're right. But the more the salaries are, the less the under the table is relevant. When the salaries are zero, that 50 grand in the shoebox means a lot. When the salaries are 400,000, that 50 grand ain't going. And it's funny, I noticed this. I had this observation in the agent game recently. So it used to be some agencies would pay huge upfront sums to players to sign with them for the draft, right? 200 grand could get you a late first round pick. Well, yeah. Now players are late first round picks are coming out with 500,000 in the bank. The agent can't buy them anymore. They have to pick. They're generally going to pick
who. Interesting. So it affects the pro world that they already have money. So there's not the desperation. Once they get to the pro world, just to sign with an agent.
It's a lot harder to buy a draft pick, which is great for me because I've never had the resources to buy a draft pick in the first place. So now guys are picking based on, you know, all things being equal, because, you know, that money doesn't go as far. And I think to your point, the shoebox money, yeah, when there's a collectively bargained, system, yeah, there might still be cheating, but the cheating is going to have much less of an impact. Because that, you know, the under the table money is going to be so much less than, you know, in theory, than what the salaries will be. So again, to your point, your earlier point, there is a brighter future here where things could be great. We saw, you know, Armando Bacot stay in college 5 years because he could have been a two-way player, but he kept coming back to North Carolina. We've seen this with a few guys who have stayed in college longer because that money's good and they can stay and develop. That's sure. Great. And they're going to get more guys graduating. There's going to be there's so much upside.
I honestly even the Kofi Coburn story is a terrible story for him, but it's a great story for other big guys, right? Like he leaves Illinois, could have played one more year, doesn't play for a year because he thought, you know, whatever he was making in Illinois, like that's what he should be playing for. And that's like not the reality. And now I think he's playing, I think he went and played the Philippines, whatever, but it's more, and you know, you hate it for Kofi, but you like it for everybody. It's like, hey dude, you could stay here and have a 5 year run where you're valued as opposed to going out in the real, in the pro world where you're not nearly as valued anymore because of your position.
I had this conversation this morning with a recruit and his mother where he has 2 years left and he's signing a 1 year deal for 200K. And I'm like, hey buddy, you play well, next year you could make 300. He's like, oh no, next year I'm gonna go pro no matter what. I said, no, you're not, because if next year you could stay there and get your degree and your other best option is going to Finland for 30K, you're going to take that 300 and you're going to get your degree. Yep. We're not just like that's, I know in your head you think that's a good idea, but it's not a good idea. And I think we're going to see more and more guys staying longer, graduating. Now that on the other hand, there's the multi-transfer progress towards degree conversation of credits transferring. But that's, I think, too in the weeds for this audience for now, even though every college basketball coach listens to this podcast. I had no idea. Everybody listens to this podcast. So, hey, all my friends listening to this, I know you all know what I'm talking about with the progress towards degree issues we're dealing with right now with multi-time transfers, but I guess we can get into that next time.
Well, let's do that next time, okay? Because you also have the progress towards degree. You have the online classes, which is an issue at some of these schools, right? They don't want to take online classes. And anything else that comes up in this last week and a half in the portal. And then we'll get to part three.
Yeah, if we ever want to get into the weeds of the academic complexities, I'm not the foremost expert. We should bring on like Brandon Goebel or someone, or maybe just like a college coach, because there is.
We can bring on Goebel. I think Goebel's been on before. We can bring on Goebel. I got no issue with that. Goebel's
my transcript man. I'm like, yo, Goebel, look at this. Is this kid going to be able to transfer? He's got to stay put. He's a wizard with it. I don't know how he does it.
All right, brother. I appreciate you joining me. I know you got both phone calls to make. Thanks for being my guest.
All right. Thanks so much for having me again.
All right. My thanks to Dan Poneman. What a talented guy. What a great presence and way of presenting all his answers. Truly appreciate his time. My thanks to you as well for listening. Reminder, if you want to listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, do so daily, 3 to 5 Eastern, 12 to 2 Pacific. Or listen, we have an hour pod that is unfiltered, unedited. And it's really cool. It's called In the Bonus. Check it all out. Wherever you download this pod, you can download that one as well. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.